Even though the Chachamim said a couple of Mishnayos ago that Chayovei Arochim and Lashkin in Oison, those who are obligated to pay up vows to donate something to the Beis HaMikdash, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash is able to take a Mashkin from them, which means that he takes some of their property in order to pressurize them to pay up their debt to the Beis HaMikdash. Nevertheless, there are certain items which the treasurer cannot take from the one who owes the Beis HaMikdash money, because these are considered to be the basic necessities which he needs in order to continue living properly. And therefore, Nosan Lo Mazon Shloshim Yom, we leave him with enough food to survive him for 30 days. And if he doesn't already have that food, so we leave him with enough money to buy food for 30 days, Uchsus Shtemasar Chodesh, and clothes for the next 12 months, Umito Mutza'as, and a bed which has been made, meaning a bed and a cover that which he needs in order to sleep properly, the sandolin and shoes with tefillin, and a pair of tefillin. We're not going to force him to borrow a pair of tefillin from somebody else. And since he needs tefillin every single day, so the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash cannot take that from him, even temporarily, in order to persuade him and pressurize him into paying up the debt towards the Beis HaMikdash. Now, all of these things which the Mishnah just listed, that we leave him with, loy, we leave it for him, so that he has enough food for himself for the next 30 days, and enough clothes, etc. We don't allow him to keep enough to feed and clothe, etc., his wife and his children. And this is because the pasuk that teaches us that the treasurer cannot take the basic necessities from the person who owes the money, the pasuk specifies that this applies specifically to that which the person himself needs, but not to that which his children and family require. As well as this, if the person was a craftsman, he was a worker who required tools, we leave him with two of each type of tool that he needs for his work. That way, if one of them breaks, he'll have a replacement. But any more than two, the treasurer is able to take. Chorosh, if he is a carpenter, for example, we would leave him with two matzodin, which we're going to translate to mean some sort of small axe, and two megeiros, which are two saws. And this is just an example of somebody who requires these tools for his work. Rabbi Eliezer says, Ikar, if he was a farmer who plowed in the field, we leave him with a pair of oxen in order that they'll be able to plow. He'll continue to be able to plow with those oxen. He needs those animals to pull the plow in the field. And chamor, if he is a donkey driver, then nosnes chamorah, we would leave him with his donkey because that is the tool, as it were, that he needs in order to continue his work. The Tanakhama, however, holds that these are not considered to be like regular tools of a worker. Rather, it's considered to be something which he owns and he uses it for his work. It's not considered a tool, and therefore we would not allow him to keep this. Mishnah Dalet. This is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. If the worker, the person who owed money to the Beis HaMikdash, he was a worker who needed tools for his work. And he had different types of tools, and min echod merube, he had a lot of one type of tool, for example, more than two, let's say he had five, and there was another type of tool that he had very few, meaning he only had one of them. The previous Mishnah taught that he's allowed to keep two. We do not tell him, and we don't allow him, to sell some of the tools which he has a lot of, and to use that money to buy the tool which only has one of, so that at least he'll be able to keep that. He'll be able to keep two of each. Rather, we only allow him to keep two of the tools that he has a lot of, and anything that he has from the tool which he has few of, meaning he only has one of them, such that he would only end up keeping two of the tools that he has a lot of, and the single tool that he has only one of. We don't allow him to exchange one of the tools in order to end up with two of the tools that he only has one of. The Gemara explains that I might have thought that as long as he had multiple tools of a different kind, he would be able to lend those tools to other people, who would in return lend him a tool which he only has one of. So technically, until now, he was able to obtain a second tool like that. And so I might have thought that by taking away the other tools, you're also sort of taking away that second tool which he could have borrowed from somebody. So maybe we should just allow him to keep the second tool, meaning to buy a second tool, etc. So the Mishnah is saying, no, he cannot do that, because at the end of the day, he does not own more than one of that kind of tool. Ends of the Mishnah. Hamakdish es mechosov, one who declares his property to be hekdesh, he wants to designate all of his possessions to the Beis HaMikdash, malin lo es tefilov, we assess the value of his tefillin, which means that his tefillin are included in the designation to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara explains that if he would have made an Erchin vow, Erchin vows always are the fixed value which the Torah talks about, and there it's always a fixed value of money. Erchin is never where you give the actual item, but rather you say, I'm going to give the Erech of a particular item. In that case, you would never include the tefillin. In, let's say, an equivalent case where somebody says, I'm going to give the value of all of my possessions. In that case, you would not include the tefillin. That is to say, we would not force him to sell his tefillin in order to pay up the money and the value of the tefillin. Because since he never said he's going to get any possessions to the Beis HaMikdash, rather only money, you understand that that doesn't include selling things that he needs to keep. However, in a case where he himself said that he's giving over the possessions themselves to the Beis HaMikdash, so now that would include the tefillin. Especially like the Gemara explains that a person thinks that by giving his tefillin to the Beis HaMikdash, he's performing a mitzvah. So his intention is to include even this in the donation to the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore it would become Hector's property, and he would need to redeem it, he would need to pay the value in order to get the tefillin back, and that they would not belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Mishnah here, this is an elaboration of Mishnah Gimel that taught that somebody who owes money to the Beis HaMikdash, the treasurer can take a mashkein from him, can take some of his possessions in order to pressurize him to pay up the debt. However, the Mishnah taught that we leave him with certain basic necessities. However, those basic necessities we leave him with for himself. We don't leave him with those basic necessities for the sake of his family and his wife, etc. However, that having been said, there are certain things which we consider to belong to his wife or his children, because they already have them and they're using them, and as such, when he made his possessions hekdesh, when he declared his donation towards the Beis HaMikdash, that never included those things which he didn't have a right over. And so the Mishnah says, Echad ha-makdish es nechosov, whether one designates his actual possessions, the physical possessions themselves, towards the Beis HaMikdash, the Echad ha-makdish es atzmai, or if he makes a vow to give the value fixed by the Torah of himself in money, ein loy loybuchsus ishtoi, he has no rights over the clothes of his wife, which she already has and wears, v'lobichsus bonov, nor with the clothes of his children, v'lobitzevashetzvah nishman, or even clothes which he has dyed for the sake of his family, and he's clearly designated the clothes for them, even if they haven't yet worn them, they still are considered to be clothes belonging to them, v'lobitzandolim chadoshim shalakach nishman, nor with new shoes that he bought for their sake. Again, even though they haven't yet used those shoes, they are considered to belong to them, and therefore his donation and his declaration to designate his property to the Beis HaMikdash never included these things, and he has no right over these things, and therefore the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash would not be able to take these items at all, not even to pressurize him in order to pay up. Alright, now the second half of the Mishnah tells us that Afal Pi She'omru, even though the Chachamim said that in other cases, not to do with hekdesh, where things need to be sold, for example, like the example we had at the beginning of the perek, if there are orphans who inherited their father's property, but the father owed money to somebody else, and that person has a right over the property, so the property needs to be sold, and the money gained from that sale will be used in order to pay out the debt which the father had. Now, when they sell the field, when they sell the property, they want to get the highest price for it. And therefore the Chachamim said that Avodim, if let's say the father left behind non-Jewish slaves, they can be sold, and in Korim Bichsuson, they should be sold with their clothes on, meaning with very nice clothes on, Lishvach, in order to increase their price. Sheim Tilokach Loi Ksus B'Shalishim Dinar, because if they buy clothes which are worth only 30 dinar, when the slave puts on those clothes, Mashbiach Humoneh, his value, the amount that he would be sold for in the marketplace, increases by a moneh, that's 100 dinar. And therefore, we would make sure to sell the slaves when they are wearing these nice clothes, because it ends up being a great gain. The chayin parah, similarly, if they are selling a cow which was left behind in the inheritance, imam tinin oisol or itliz, if they wait until the market day before selling it, then again, they're going to get a higher price, mashbachasi. Its price, its value increases. V'chein margolis, similarly, a diamond or a pearl, some sort of precious stone, in malin oisol akrach, if we bring it up to the city, a more busy place, then mashbachasi, its value increases, it's worth more over there, you're going to get a higher price. And so in general, if we are selling, for example, the orphan, the inheritor's property, in order to pay out the father's debt, they would wait in order to get a higher price. However, when it comes to hekdesh, if there is something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and somebody comes to redeem it by paying its value to the Beis HaMikdash, we do not wait until the market day and all of these things. Rather, ein la hekdesh ela mekoymo v'shaitoi. There is a rule that hekdesh only takes into account its current place and its current time. If we wait for other things, so it's true that its value and the price we could get could increase and is likely to increase, but there's also a chance that its value will go down. And when it comes to hekdesh property, that which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, we cannot take any risks. And therefore the rule is, when it comes to redeeming something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, we take into account only its current value based on its current location and its current time. Perekzayin Mishnah Aleph, the final three parakim of the Masechta enter into a new discussion of stei achuza. A stei achuza refers to a field that is owned by a descendant of the family who originally inherited that piece of land when the land of Eretz Yisrael was conquered in the times of Yeshua. And the law is that if the person who owns this field sells it to somebody else, the land returns to him or his family, his inheritors, when the year of Yovel arrives. The year of Yovel occurs once every 50 years, and one of the laws which are included in Yovel is that all pieces of land return to the original families or the descendants of those who inherited that piece of land when Eretz Yisrael was conquered. So essentially, every single sale of a piece of land is really just a temporary sale for however many years are remaining until the Yovel year. Now, because of this, the price of a field would obviously go down the closer you come to the Yovel year, because you are selling it for a shorter amount of time. Now, if somebody designates a piece of land, a stei achuza, to the Beis HaMikdash, he makes it into hekdesh, when somebody comes to redeem that piece of land, which means that he pays the value of the land to the Beis HaMikdash, so that the Beis HaMikdash can use it, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash can use it for the Beis HaMikdash's needs, and the one who redeemed the field would be able to keep it until the Yovel year, when it would have to go back to the original owner, or the original owner's inheritors. Or it could be that the original owner himself is the one redeeming it. Be it as it may, in the same way as we find regarding the laws of Erchin, that although one is able to donate a person's market value to the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah also provides a fixed value based on the person's age group or gender, and that is a different form of designating the value of a person to the Beis HaMikdash. So too, when it comes to redeeming a piece of land which had been donated to the Beis HaMikdash, if the one who made it into hekdesh, he designated it to the Beis HaMikdash, if he comes to redeem it, the Torah gives a fixed amount that he has to pay to the Beis HaMikdash in order to redeem that field. It is not based on market value, how much it will be sold in the market, or you wouldn't take the piece of land to the market, but it's not based on the value which somebody would buy it for. Rather, as we mentioned very briefly earlier on in the Masechta, regardless of the quality of the land, the Torah says that for a given area of a base kor, which is the area that a chomer, which is a particular volume of seeds, can be planted, for that given area, the price of the redemption is 50 shekel, or in the Mishnah's language, 50 selah. However, as we mentioned before, the price of anything goes down the closer you get to Yovel. And therefore, the price of 50 shekel is only for somebody who comes to redeem a field at the beginning of the Yovel cycle, where there are still 49 years to go until the Yovel year. And it sort of comes out that the price of redeeming a field for 49 years, because again, after 49 years, it would go back to the original owner anyway. Redemption is like buying the field, so the fixed amount which the Torah provided for redeeming a field or piece of land which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash is 50 sela for 49 years. Which means that each year, each of those 49 years, is worth a sela plus a 49th of a sela. Now, a pundion is a type of coin which actually happens to be a 48th of a sela. And it's very, very close to the amount which we need. The Gemara actually explains why this is, how we account for the extra sela, but the point is, as this Mishnah will show us, the price of redemption for each year is indeed one sela and one pundion. So a sela and a 48th of a sela, the Gemara explains what we do with that extra, how we account for the difference between a 48th of a sela and a 49th. Now, despite everything that we have said, there is a posuk which teaches a exception to all of this, which is not necessarily a logical exception, but the Torah teaches that within the last 2 years before Yovel, if there are less than 2 full years until the Yovel year, then we don't actually minus any amount from the original 50 sela which had to be paid to redeem the entire field. This piece of land, which is the size of a base car, the Torah fixes as being worth, in terms of redemption, it's worth 50 sela. However, the nearer you get to Yovel, the more you can reduce off the full price of that field. However, the Torah teaches that within the last 2 years before Yovel, you cannot reduce any amount of the full price which the Torah fixed for the redemption of that field. And therefore, if you were to redeem the field within the last 2 years, you would have to pay 50 sela, instead of just 2 sela and 2 pundion. And because of that, the Mishnah advises that in Makdishin Lifnei HaYovel Pachas Mishtei Shonim, one should not make his field into Hekdash by designating it to the Beis HaMikdash within the last 2 years before Yovel. Because if he will want to redeem it, then he'll have to pay a much higher price than it's really worth for just 2 years. Now, if he doesn't end up redeeming it by Yovel, we're going to learn later on that if something belongs to Hekdash at the time of Yovel, then it wouldn't necessarily go back to the original owner. So he would definitely want to redeem it, but he would have to redeem it for a very high price, and therefore the Mishnah advises that he shouldn't make it into Hekdash, he shouldn't designate it to the Beis HaMikdash, in a way that would only give him the option of paying the full 50 shekel, the full 50 sela, in order to redeem it. Now, the next part of the Mishnah, the Gemara has two different explanations. We are going to explain according to one way. At any point after Yovel, during any given year, one does not redeem it with less than a year. And the explanation of this is given by the next part of the next phrase, because we don't take months into account when it comes to redeeming that property which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. We only go according to full years. For example, if let's say there are 10 years to go before the Yovel year, the cost of redemption would be 10 sela and 10 pundion. Now what happens if there are 10 and a half years to go before Yovel? Do we say that he now needs to redeem it for 10 sela and 10 pundion plus a half? Half a sela is 24 pundion. So it will be 10 sela and 34 pundion altogether. The Mishnah is teaching, no, we go according to full years, and therefore if there are 10 and a half years to go before Yovel, we need to consider that half year as if it's a full year, so you would have to pay 11 sela and 11 pundion. So the Mishnah is again sort of giving advice that if you redeem a field in the middle of a year, you would end up sort of paying more than what the value should be according to how much is left according to the Yovel year. Now, according to this, if you think about it, if let's say there are 1.5 years to go before Yovel, based on this previous rule, we would consider that to be as if there are 2 years to go before Yovel. Which means that you would, as long as there are at least 2 years to go, we would still reduce from the 50 shekel, and you would need to pay 2 shekel and 2 pundion, 2 sela and 2 pundion. We learned that if there are less than 2 years to go before Yovel, then you wouldn't be able to give the reduced price, rather you'd have to give the full 50 sela. But based on the rule which we just said, that we don't count half years are counted as full years, so even if you've got only a year and a half to go, let's say, until the oval year, that would be considered like 2 years. So you would only need to pay 2 sela and 2 shekel, and 2 pundyoin. So to counter that, the Mishnah says no. Aval ha-hekdesh mechashiv chodoshim. If it's for hekdesh's benefit, for the Beis HaMikdash's benefit, then we do take account months. We do take the months into account, and we would look at this as being a year and a half. And since it's less than 2 years until Hegdash, you would have to give the full 50 sela. Continues the Mishnah now with laws which we explained in the introduction. If somebody designates his field to belong to the Beis HaMikdash at a time that the laws of Yovel apply, we're going to see in the next perek that the laws of Yovel don't always apply. It depends on the majority of the Jewish people being in Eretz Yisrael. And all of that, what we have been talking about until now, applies specifically in that situation. But be as it may, when that does apply, one needs to pay the redemption price for a given size of land. What is that size? The size of land which can be sown with a chomer of barley seeds. That is a certain volume of barley seeds. 50 shekel kesef, the cost for that amount is, for that size of field, is 50 sela. 50 silver shekel of the Torah, which is equivalent to 50 silver sela of the Mishnah. Again, this would be only at the beginning of the Yovel cycle. You would, however, reduce it as each year passes. If there were holes or ditches in the field, which were 10 tfochim deep at least, and they were filled with water, and therefore seeds cannot be planted there. If there are rocks which are at least 10 tefachim high over there, and therefore they cannot be planted, they are not measured as part of this size of land. So although they do become hekdesh, we would not include them in this amount of land when calculating the size of the land. Pochis makan, however, if they are smaller than that, then imdodim imar, they are measured with it. If somebody makes his field into hekdesh, he designates it to the Beis HaMikdash at least 2 or 3 years before Yovel, or any given number of years, when he comes to redeem it and pay the value of the field, he would need to give a sela and a pundyoin per year. What happens if he declared that I want to give the redemption price each year, year by year? Let's imagine there are 5 years left. He doesn't want to give 5 sela and 5 pundyoin on the spot now to redeem it. But rather, at the beginning of each year, he says, I want to give a sela and a pundyoin for that year. Says the Mishnah, in Shomen Lo, we don't listen to him. He rather needs to give all of the redemption price in one go in order to redeem the field. If he wants to, he can choose to redeem only part of the field. But if he wants to redeem the entire field, he must pay the entire price of the redemption right now instead of year by year.